Good morning, everyone. We just heard the music from Cinema Paradiso, and it's a beautiful example of a non-family member really playing an important life or important part in the life of a child. So if you haven't seen that movie, it's a good one. My name is Kathy Hedge, and I'd like to welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. For those of you who come here from large families bursting with noise and loving chaos, you are welcome here. For those raised in quiet, focused attention, you are welcome here. And for those of you who have ventured out alone to discover your own family, you are welcome here. And for those of you who are still trying to figure out what a family is, you are welcome here. We are a fellowship of the Unitarian Universalists who meet to express our individual beliefs and religious convictions. We belong to the national organization, the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations, and are member of the UUA's Prairie Star District. The Unitarian Universalist Association has no creed, no prophet, or sacred book, but we agree on seven principles that are listed in the back of your bulletin. Visitors, you are invited to join us after our service for refreshments, and today our treats are provided by Kathleen and Dan Swenson and Jan and Matt Campbell, so thank you. If you are new to the fellowship, or if you have a guest that you would like to introduce, you are welcome to do so, and please wait for the microphone, which we have back here. So do we have anybody who'd like to introduce themselves or someone else? Okay, well, again, you are all welcome here. And what we have now is we're going to do our, I want to give your attention to the announcements that are in the bulletin. We have a work day that's coming up on Sunday, March 31st. And then on Sunday, April 1st, we have a UUFM service and comedy concert with Greg Tamblyn. Information is here, and there's also additional announcements inside our program. Now let us, for our call to worship, now let us celebrate as a community, a family, and a community and a family of caring individuals. And to enter our worship, we're going to light our chalice. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't let you say hello to each other. Would you please welcome those near you with a smile and a handshake? Oh, I wish you could have seen that from up here. It was wonderful when I said you could talk to each other and say hello. Your faces were like kindergartners, just like, yes, this is going to be great. So thank you very much. So that fits with the lighting of our chalice. We look to our families or those who are family for us to light our way through the dark. And for those who are our light bearers, those who have gone before us, and those who stand beside us, we light this chalice. And now would you please join us in our opening song? It's hymn number 360, Here We Have Gathered, and Marilyn Caldwell is going to be our musician. Thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. Now is the time we share those joys and concerns that make us who we are. Please wait for the microphone to be brought to you.
Enel Forrester, and I just want to say that I went and visited June Kermser. She fell, and she's in Mercy, and probably will be there till Monday or Tuesday. Has a huge hematoma on the inside of her left leg, but she's in good spirits, and I was glad to be able to go see her. She was glad to see her. So if you want to get a chance to go stop by, I know she'd like to, because Phil cannot get out.
Well, thank you. For those joys not spoken and those concerns that are still with you, we wish you ease. And now we have a story for all ages, and Amy's going to read to us Molly's Family by Nancy Garden. And children, why don't you come up and join us here? It's a really good story, Amy assured me.
Everyone, can we hear me? Yay. Okay, well, I'm going to read Molly's Family, because today, during service, while you guys are gone, we're going to be talking about families. So, first off, Friday is open school night, and Mrs. Marston, Molly's kindergarten teacher, everyone's family is invited to come and visit. What can we do to make our room look nice? We could dust and clean, said Krista. We could wash the windows, said Lewis. We could build a big castle, said Danielle. We could draw pictures, said Molly, and put them on the walls. What a good idea, said Mrs. Marston. Let's get started. Krista got the duster, Adam got the broom. Lewis washed the windows with Lily. Danielle got out the blocks. Kevin and Sarah helped her build the castle. Molly and Stefan and Tanya and Tommy got out the paper and crayons. I'm going to draw our classroom, said Stefan. I'm going to draw my house, said Tanya. I'm going to draw our open school night, said Tommy. I'm going to draw my family, said Molly. Molly worked very hard on her picture. First she drew Mommy, then she drew Mama Lou, and then she drew Sam, her puppy. Finally, she put in some green grass and a big yellow sun. There, said Molly, I'm done. Tommy looked at Molly's paper. That's not a family, he said. It is so, said Molly. It's my family. Where's your daddy, asked Tommy. I don't have a daddy, said Molly. I have Mommy and Mama Lou and Sam. You can't have a mommy and a mama, said Tommy. Can she, Stefan? Stefan shook his head. I don't think so, he said. But you don't have to have a daddy. I don't have a daddy. He showed Molly his picture. This is our classroom, he said. And this is my mommy and my sister Jackie coming to see it. See, said Tommy, Stefan's only got one mommy. That's all you can have. It is not, said Molly. Tommy laughed. Molly says she can have a mommy and a mama, he told everyone. But there's no such thing. I have a grandma and a mommy and a daddy and two brothers, Tanya said. I just have a daddy, said Adam. Daddy and me. And I have a daddy and a mommy, Tommy said. No one has two mommies. Molly tried not to cry. What's the matter here? Asked Mrs. Marston. Molly said she has a mommy and a mama, said Tommy, but you can't have a mommy and a mama, can you? Miss Marston sat down and looked at Molly's picture. Who is this? She asked. Molly sniffed. Mama Lou, she said. And who is this? Mommy. Molly wiped her nose with a tissue. Tanya gave her Is Mama Lou visiting? Asked Miss Marston. No. Is she your aunt? No. She's my Mama Lou. So, said Miss Marston, it looks to me as if you can have a mommy and a mama. Soon the bell rang, and Miss Marston said it was time to go home. Molly took her picture home on the bus. That night at bedtime, Molly asked, Mommy, you're my real mommy, aren't you? Why, yes, sweetie, said Mommy. She sounded surprised. Of course I am. Yes, Mommy, said Mama. Or Mommy, she is. Too many M's. But Tommy says you can't have a mommy and a mama. Mommy hugged Molly. Tommy doesn't know everything, she said. Mommy called Mama Lou to come in and told her what Tommy said. Well, isn't that silly, said Mama Lou. Look at us. When Mama Lou and I were first living together, said Mommy, we decided that we had so much love that we wanted to share it with a baby. So your mommy had you, said Mama Lou. She's your birth mommy. I went to a judge and told him I wanted you to be my little girl too. He said I could adopt you, so I'm your adopted mommy. I bet there are other girls and boys in your school who are adopted, said Mommy. Do they have a mommy and a mama? Asked Molly. Some of them might, sugar, said Mama Lou, but there are lots of different kinds of families. That's right, said Mommy. Okay, Molly? I guess so, Molly answered. But the next day, Molly left her picture at home. When she got to school, she peeked in her classroom. It looked really nice. It was very clean, and the windows sparkled. The castle was perfect. Stephen and Tanya's and Tommy's pictures were all on the walls. Miss Marston came to the door. Molly, where's your picture? At home, said Molly. Why? Because Tommy said you can't have a mommy and a mama. No one else does. But, said Miss Marston, you have a mommy and a mama, don't you? Yes, Molly said, I do. Well then, said Miss Marston, doesn't that mean you can have a mommy and a mama? Molly still wasn't sure. I hope you bring your picture back, said Miss Marston. Tomorrow is open school night. I'd like to hang your pictures so everyone can see what a nice family you have. Molly thought about it a while. She hung up her coat. She remembered what Mama Lou had said about there being different kinds of families. She looked at Stephen's picture, which showed his mommy and his sister coming to visit the kindergarten room. She remembered what Tanya said about having a grandma and a mommy and a daddy and two brothers, and what Adam said about having a daddy. Mama Lou was right. There even were different kinds of families in her very own class. Molly also remembered what Mommy had said about how she and Mama Lou had so much love that they wanted to share it with a baby. And that baby was me, Molly whispered. That made her feel warm inside. The next day, Molly took her picture back to school. Here, Miss Marston, she said. Oh, Molly, thank you, said Miss Marston. Look, everyone, here's Molly's nice family again. She held up Molly's picture. Here is her mommy, she said. Here is her Mama Lou, and there's her puppy Sam. I have a puppy too, said Tommy. Can he come to open school night? If he's on a leash, said Miss Marston. Everybody in your families can come, she said to the whole class. All kinds of family members and all kinds of families. Miss Marston hung Molly's picture on the wall near Tommy's. They all put away their toys and their crayons and their storybooks to finish making the room ready for open school night. That evening, all families came, even Tommy's and Molly's puppies. And everyone had a wonderful time. The end. Is that it? Okay. Go now in peace.
Go now in peace. May the Spirit of God surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go.
Thank you, Amy. Well, since Amy shared us a lovely definition of families, I thought I would share my definition of families when you grow up. So So my schoolmates told me that I shouldn't play with Janice because her mother was divorced. In sixth grade at Mercy Academy, I really wasn't quite certain what that meant. I just figured her mother must have done something really terrible, so her husband left her. I felt sorry for Janice, but I liked her still, and one day after school, we walked to her apartment. I met her mother, a very sweet, anemic-looking woman. She gave us ginger snaps and lemonade. I told the school bullies. After that, I think they took turns walking her home to get free cookies. But I believe that I had done something very noble in befriending this exotic girl. And I was truly sad when she moved away months later. Divorce was such a foreign concept. My parents were married over 60 years until we lost our dad. And they were best friends, and I assumed that's how life was supposed to be. My definition of family was a grouping of individuals based on two parents, multiple children, grandparents, and dozens of uncles, aunts, and cousins. But my life has played out differently, so as that of my siblings. We've had the two-parent families for a while. Then fractures, although they were terribly painful at the time, brought healing, excitement, and a totally different perspective of family. My little brother was barely 21 when he met a divorced woman with two children. My mom was shook up, wondering if this was the right choice for him. And then she realized that two of her daughters were divorced women with two children. And then she hoped that she would find, that we would find someone so nice as my brother. She worked with my sister-in-law's dad. He was a highly respected physician. And one day she called him over to tell him, "I think that you ought to know the man she's moving in with is my son." And then he smiled really hugely and responded, "If he's your son, then she'll be very happy." And my brother and his wife are still together and best friends. The rest of us have found our own definitions of together through remarriage, two long-term partners, and a contentment with solitude. I have four siblings and myself. My divorced daughter and her son have two sets of concerned, loving adults and a step-grandparent within 2 miles. Christmas Eve in my family is a boisterous combination of former spouses, sweethearts, his children, her children, their children, and our adored grandchild. And my former mother-in-law, she loves me. But even though she still beats me at Scrabble. So now, to our great delight, my ex-husband and his partner are engaged, and it's a lovely reason for a good party. My siblings and I have grown to be much closer than we were as children. My sisters and I don't have to share the same space, and most importantly, we don't have to share the same clothes. But we do share our memories and dreams for our children and our grandchildren. The men in our lives have opened our hearts to our grandchildren and are adored in return. One brother is my son's sensei, his mentor, mentors him in his new career. And my other brother is our family's history keeper, and his partner, who we consider our brother too, generously shares the room for all the boxes of slides and 8mm films and letters. We love, but we also like each other. And I once knew someone who feared that love was a finite quality. If you shared too much with one person, it naturally diminished the amount that was left for everyone else. The greatest gift of my original family that they gave to me was the capacity to see love as infinite. As our families grow and stretch, so does my heart. So thanks, Mom and Dad. And now it's time for our offertory. Yeah, you get a little more time. This is from Jane Howard, the author of Families. Call it a clan, call it a network, call it a tribe, call it a family. Whatever you call it, whoever you are, you need one. Now we have Amy Fowler, who's going to share with us her thoughts.
The Wikipedia definition of family states that it's a co-residence, an organization by kinship, are both integral in the development of the concept of the family. A co-residential group that makes up a household may share general survival goals and a residence, but may not fulfill the varied and sometimes ambiguous requirements for definition as a family. The history of the family for most cultures of the world is set in creation myths. Be it the Greek poet Hesiod's poems about Greek gods and their relationships and family ties, or, of course, everyone's favorite, Judeo-Christian books of Genesis, Adam and Eve. Egyptian pharaohs claimed to be direct descendants of the sun god, while European nobility kept well-documented genealogy records in order to guarantee religious and secular prestige. I think many cultures still do that, though. I once knew a girl in elementary school who bragged about being related to Abraham Lincoln and was quite popular on the playground for it. Novelist Irma Bombeck once said, "The family. We are a strange little band of characters trudging through life, sharing diseases and toothpaste, coveting one's other's desserts, hiding shampoo, borrowing money, locking each other out of our rooms, inflicting pain and kissing to heal it in the same instant, loving, laughing, defending, and trying to figure out the common thread that bound us together. I had a very short marriage to a man I had dated on and off since the seventh grade. We hadn't spoken in more than 2 years prior to the rekindling of our romance that resulted in marriage and pregnancy. However, our long history and upcoming bundle of joy didn't stop him from looking for a few kicks elsewhere, and our marriage unraveled as quickly as it began. He excused himself from our marriage 3 months before Jocelyn's birth, immediately moving in with another woman. Ultimately, I think it was better that way. I came home from the hospital, a single mom, and those few months prior to Jocelyn's arrival gave me the opportunity to prepare myself for that. And for more than 9 months, I was a single mom, raising her on my own with no help from her father, who by then was already engaged to another woman and expecting another child. And then another shortly after the miscarriage of the first. This child was born on April 12, 2008. And the next several months Jocelyn spent bonding with him would prepare her for becoming a big sister at home as well. And Brent and I had Riley, October 27, 2008. So, at both Jocelyn's homes, she was suddenly a big sister, and of course loving it for the most part, minus the few just focus on me only moments that naturally occurred. Now, as many would expect, Jocelyn's relationship with her new brother's mother didn't last more than 6 months after the birth of Landon. But even though they separated, it was Kayla, Landon's mother, who was still responsible for Jocelyn, which she spent her every other weekend with her father. And Landon and Jocelyn's bond only got stronger as months went by. It wasn't but only a few months after Kayla and Robert went to court that he stopped all contact with Jocelyn for more than 6 months and could have successfully squashed the bond of his two children had by them having no contact with each other as a result of his choices to not see Jocelyn. However, Kaylin and I sorted through our obvious issues and we had with each other as a result of his lying ways. Apparently I was getting a little heated at that point. And began getting the kids together as often as we had time for. I'm proud of the two of us for putting our children's best interests and need to be the loving siblings that they are together in front of the hard feelings we once shared. But when you're a good parent, that's what you do, right? I have often heard the saying, blood is thicker than water, in respect to who we are supposed to be most dedicated to in our lives. And although I can understand it to an extent, and who can we expect to be there for us in times of happy and in times of absolute turmoil but our blood families? But we can't downplay those people who came into our lives by our own choices rather than by blood relation. There are those few people in everyone's lives who are absolutely in no way related to you that might trade, who you might even trade a sibling for, given that you had to choose between the two. Okay, maybe not. But you might certainly not want to choose between the two at all because they both mean the world to you and neither of whom can be replaced. I'd almost go so far as to say those people who are in our lives by choice, even at your absolute worst, should be held on to closer, because those are the people who love you for you, even though they don't have to. Laura and I actually just were talking about this the other day, how we really feel that our spirits are drawn to certain spirits many lives over, even though sometimes I question the beliefs in reincarnation. And that somehow we are always pulled to the same spirits over and over. She mentions that maybe Jocelyn was once her mother in a previous life. But whether you believe in reincarnation or whatever, there has to be some sort of force that brings us all together as family of many forms, be it blood or the heart. And now Laura.
Can you hear me? Okay. Family is holding each other in the face of uncertainty, standing still and strong on the path of peace when so much else is chaos. It's holding little hands and little heads when life seems so unfair, when it is unfair. When little hearts have to get broken, when everything is flailing hard in every direction, and you're holding as tight as you can, families being the rock to which they can stand and watch it all fly away. It is doing your own laundry and making your own bed. It is dancing in the kitchen and bedtime stories by flashlight. It's making new traditions and blending and honoring the original ones. Family is, I know you hate me, and that's fine. You are still important, because you're you, and I love you because you're you, always. Family is cold, black, wet noses and white, furry hugs. It's walks in the sunshine and holes dug in the yard. It's enjoying every bit of nature nature has to offer and swimming after sticks for hours. Family is nuzzled soft kisses when you're crying and barking. When someone is at the door or in the yard or moved a little bit or made any kind of sound at all, it is knowing just the right moments to approach an inconsolable child and playing tug and fetch and tails wagging when we come home. It is a bond so strong neither time nor space could bend or break it. Family is driving in the dark for 30 minutes to take my daughter on a car ride so that she felt loved when I just wasn't enough, and remaining calm in the depths of emotions that my son has to feel. Family is accepting the three of us as a whole for whatever time we are together, with our joys and love and wounds. It is my favorite little five-year-old who says, "You can hug me, it'll make me smile," and being honored with the chance to be a part of your children's lives. Family is fixing my porch when it falls down before work and taking my son fishing all night. Family is loving little Sarah Sue as much as I do. It's sharing late night secrets and our deepest fears and celebrating every victorious moment life has to offer. It's being able to tell me when I'm wrong, which isn't always easy to do. Family is coming every time I had a bad dream and teaching me to be the person that I have become. Loving me even when I run away and make bad choices and hate you and hate myself. Family is getting me a hotel room when I needed to hide from Clayton and loving me still when I went back. It's driving 6 hours when I got divorced to clean my kitchen while I bawl on the couch and the floor. Family is a road trip to Vermont to visit my brother, together, and loving each other with an untouchable certainty. It's growing to become friends and accepting the role of grandparents joyfully and fully without question. It's long phone conversations and get-well cards when the world is painful, and laughing when life is so magnificent it just has to be shared. Family is a commitment and an opportunity and a responsibility to do what's right and kind and good. It's to fall into love and tread softly there. Family is indescribable and irreplaceable. It is fun and folly. It is support. It is being the one you call when you get bad news or good news without hesitation at 2 a.m. Family is honesty and patience, peace and war. Family is hard and easy. It's blind faith in some unseen connection. It's beautiful.
Thank you, ladies. It's beautiful.
What I'd like you to do is just to take a moment and actually 2 minutes, because it takes some time to think about this, but just to think about what family is to you. And please remember that when we look at the definition of family, we're talking, as Amy mentioned, it's not just blood relations. It's those who fill those needs in your heart when you need it most, those people that you can call at 2 in the morning. And I'd like you to take a moment to think of what your definition of family is, and then try to match to it a short story that you would be willing to share with the people who are sitting near you. Then when we're done with that, if you could encourage the one who has a story you think everyone should hear, then we would love to hear your definition of family and the stories that really seal that to you. And we would like to share those with each other today. So would you please take, well, now a minute and a half. And if you need more time, we'll do that. But just for some quiet meditation, to think of your definition of family and a specific story that you would be willing to share that identifies that definition. You finish your thoughts, please. I'm going to share with you my definition. Well, I did share my definition here, but my definition of family is those who can surprise you when you think you know them so very well, when you need the surprise from them the very, very most. I'm thinking of the time when I was in the hospital with my dad when he was awakening from brain surgery. And my brothers and sisters, we felt we would be able to handle ourselves really pretty well, except we were concerned about my older brother. My older brother has a lovely partner, but he has always been someone who lives in the past. And to him, the past is more real than the present. And so we were so very concerned about him, how he would respond when he saw my dad. He tends to be very, well, extremely dramatic. And we knew that it was the heartfelt, you know, it was just my brother's soul is on his outside. It's not on his inside. And so we were so very concerned. And so we had really, you know, tried to tell each other, don't cry in front of Dad, because you know that hurts him more than anything in the world to see us cry. So don't cry in front of him. He'll know we're hurting, but do the best to maintain your control, or just maybe weeping but not sobbing out loud and everything. And so I remember I was sitting on the other side of my dad's bed, and my brother showed up at the door. And I was just thinking, I could see it on his face. I could see it coming. I mean, I know, have known this man all my life, and I could see the show coming, and I was terrified. I didn't know what to do, especially since I was on the other side of the room. And I could see my brother, his arms starting to come out, the wail starting to come, and then I saw him just go like this and walk to the side of the door and take some deep breaths and come back in the room, and his face was calm and beautiful, and he went up to my dad and just touched his hand, and my dad opened his eyes and looked at his son, who is in control and in loving. And at that moment, I think I was prouder of my brother than I ever have been in my whole life. And that surprise, that moment when you're least expecting someone to find the very best within them, to me, that is the person who is part of my family. And that's the story I wanted to share. So if you would please find folks that are near you that you haven't already shared everything with. So if you wouldn't mind just maybe leaning towards someone who's in the row in front of you or beside you, would you please share your definitions of families and stories, and then we'll listen to each other's. I'm going to sit over here.
Thank you.
We'll take about one more minute, please. One more minute. Would you please wrap up your comments, please? I can tell by looking around that there are many good stories. I see smiles. I see sad faces. I see people who don't want to stop because they're right in the middle of something really good. But we do have our microphone that if you could encourage some, if you have some of the people that you listen to that you think their story ought to be told to everyone else, please tell them right now. Yay. And we do, if you would please wait for the microphone, and we have our first volunteer here.
And I didn't even discuss this with anybody, but everybody already knows about the story. Marilyn Caldwell. About 3 years ago, one of my good friends from Washington, D.C., where we lived for 20 years, called. She was crying, and she said, "I'm losing my house. The bank is foreclosing on her house." And I know her well enough to know what her house looks like, and I said, "Is there any way you could get renters in the basement?" And she said, "We just don't have an apartment there." So, without even thinking, I said, "If you could hang on for another month, Stephen and I will convert your basement to an apartment." And it took us a lot longer than we thought. We were gone for 2 months. But we did it for them, and they kept the house. And the interesting thing is they have a lot of family around them. And their family wasn't helping. But when we came from Kansas to D.C. with all our tools, finally the family rallied around. And we didn't give the financial help that they needed. They got that from a sister. But we gave the impetus for their family finally to come together. That's kind of a different kind of family, but I'll tell you, we've been rewarded in many ways.
We had a lot of interesting stories on this row, and for some reason, I was nominated. I don't, whatever that means. This is an unorthodox story that I really gave some thought to when I opened the New York Times this morning to look at the book review, and the lead book review was the title of the book is Why Be Normal If You Can Be Why Be Happy If You Can Be Normal. And I'm very intrigued to see what that book's about. But I recall, and this is another Romania story. I worked largely in orphanages, children who had absolutely no parents and no family. And I worked in an institution for children who were considered unsalvageable. And I was intrigued by children that I was very drawn to who had lived in this institution where 75% of the kids died their first winter there. And they had lived there for more than 10 years. And these children had found a way to survive, but not just survive. There were a lot of survivors, but they had found a way to thrive. And so what was that? They were segregated by sex. They were in terrible conditions. And these children, the ones who were mobile, had survived. First, I called it friendship, but then I realized it was family. And I came to that conclusion because a variety of people would come in want to rescue these children and get them out of these terrible places rather than work with the places. And these children did not do well. They crashed completely when they were taken away abruptly. And the reason they did is they had created families. And there were surrogate families, but they were incredibly loving and close. They had their own code of honor. They protected each other. They sat with each other through illnesses. They protected each other from beatings. And they did this very quietly, and it was the most incredible phenomenon because they truly loved each other, and they formed these little family units. And then they formed larger social units, but they all had a family unit, and I think that it made me aware of the what we might call the human spirit. It naturally gravitates and gets its nurturing from family, and that it doesn't have to be quote normal. As these kids would point out, but you do not disrupt those units lightly and come to conclusions about whether they are the right thing or not the right thing. So that's my little story.
Michael Oldfather. Since so many of us grew up in families where the religion is different from Unitarian Universalism, we have, I suppose, a lot of different stories about how that has played in our lives and whether, as in, I feel fortunate in my case, my parents were very accepting of that. It may have been because they'd given up a long time ago on being able to influence me on most anything, and so figured that it would just not be hard to do, but also because they had much different religious orientations or experiences growing up. My father had always been part of active part of a fairly conventional church, while my mother's father was gone most of the time as an itinerant minister in part, and her mother regularly joined the newest, most radical church that came to town, and she had very little respect for organized religion, and so disorganized religion appealed to her, and she was fine with my being here. But I just wonder about others whose families have been maybe a little less supportive than mine was in coming to terms with our leaving the fold in that regard. Just ask the question.
not going to address Michael's question, but Sybil and I were talking about... Sybil and I were talking about the importance of a good babysitter. I had the wonderful experience of growing up from a very young age having a wonderful babysitter and her husband, and they essentially became grandparents when mine were further away and not always available to come to school performances and graduations and special events like that, birthdays and whatnot. And then Sybil's experience was finding a babysitter for her child until about the time of five, and how she was a mentor to her and about 10 years older, but had had several more children at the time when Sybil had her first. And so that relationship that you can form when you perhaps have lost people who you would turn to in your life can be very important. And especially when you're talking about who do you place your children in the care of when you're not available, you know, to have a mother or a sister, for instance. So, and then Michael, yeah.
Kathleen Tenona, I also am not going to address Michael's question. So my thought, which we talked about in our group, was my Kansas family. And just, this kind of addresses Michael's point, I guess, but is that we, Pat Embers and Dick Beeman and Harriet Yonke and I all share a birthday. And we had a birthday party on our birthday, February 27th. So we had a great dinner together. That felt, you know, it felt like a family gathering. And I think it's, you know, in part because we come from the same religious beliefs. That's a very loose term. But, it felt like a Thanksgiving potluck, except it was in February and we weren't related. But it was a nice tradition that I hope we can continue with in the future.
Ditto. I just want to relate a little bit about what I talked about with our group and about my parents, who are both gone now, as of about 15 years. I had said they were kind of like a model family for me, even though I moved away from home. I'm from Ohio. I ended up here in Kansas, and it was fine. I didn't really want to live around them that much because, not that they weren't good for me or I didn't love them, but I just needed my independence. And they pointed that out to me since I was like 6 years old, that I needed my independence when I wandered off in a department store and they had to call the authorities to find me and all of that. But anyway, I as I grow older, I think I realize how much they mean to me. I think of them all the time. I think I'm more like my dad than I ever realized, and little memories come back that are with me, you know, my whole life, and I'm very grateful for that, and I think that helps me with my family a lot, and has.
I'll address Michael's question from the other point of view. I grew up in a very sort of marginally religious family. They were, we moved 21 times between birth and college, so sometimes we were Presbyterians and sometimes we were Congregationalists, sort of depended. But it was not an overall presence in our lives. So my moving to Unitarianism, because I also became an academic, was not a huge surprise to anybody, although we didn't really discuss it. However, in about 2 weeks, our son is going to marry into a very Roman Catholic family. So we will now have a chance to try this on the other, from the other point of view. To me, it makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. And my son said to me, Mom, they're going to have communion. I said, well, that's nice, honey. And he said, will you do it? And I said, well, I'll just look around. If I sense that it's important to the bride's parents, I'll be right there. And I won't feel hypocritical at all, because the point of this whole ceremony is to bring you two together and make everybody happy. And I have no trouble with that. So at least that's my opinion going in. But this is as close as I have ever been to Roman Catholic, so we'll see how I do going forward.
I'm Kathleen Oldfather, and I come from a very large family, so a lot of feelings there, and then we had our own blended kind of mixed family, Michael and I, with stepchildren and our son. There's a lot there, but this week I kind of realized, I guess my definition is those I feel most loyal to, and I happened to be at Meadowlark right after June Kermser had her fall. And she saw me, she was in miserable screaming pain, and she saw me, and she yelled out my name. And, you know, all of a sudden, I was in the middle of it, and I was her family. Her daughter was out of town, and I stayed with her, and then I got her husband to his room, and I went to the ER, and I just thought, somebody's got to be with her, and she's part of us here. We wouldn't maybe even exist without people like June Kermser, a founder. And so, anyway, that's another definition of family, the people that we come to love and care about in this group. Certainly felt loyal to.
That was beautiful, Kathleen. Thanks for sharing that. And very much along the same lines, you know, my mother spent her last 5 years in healthcare at Meadowlark, and I was the only blood relative, and she had a lot of family in Meadowlark, and people that gave her love and care and stood by her even when she was being really hard to stand by, you know. And she wasn't easy on those girls, and the girls at Meadowlark were loyal to her. They were good to her. and she could call on them anytime she needed them. So that's one thing. Also, though, you know, what I wanted to say is when I grew up, my parents were away a lot of the time, because in the Foreign Service, not only does your father go to work, but your mother has to go to all these meetings and receptions all the time. So I was mostly with the housekeeper and the cook. And those were people, my family, and the neighbor, and the neighbors, you know. So those were my family. And later on, when I went to boarding school, I had 35 sisters in boarding school. And so my life was basically, my family, my blood relatives are still very much a part of me. I talked to my brother this morning. I talked to my daughter last night. They're always on the phone because none of them are here. But I realized last night, As I sat around the table with a group of friends that I've known for about the 15 years that I've been here in Manhattan, that I've got a lot of family here. No blood relatives, though, but I've got a lot of family right here in Manhattan, so I feel very good.
I have another short June Kermser story. My mother and I ran into an Nell Forrester yesterday and went to see June at the hospital. And she was relating that she had been involved with the school board, right, for what, 50 years or more? 53 years. And they had named an auditorium after her, and she was kind of flustered by that. But I had to point out that they also named the first month of their vacation after her. I thought that was pretty much family there.
Sabrina Boker, I'm going to address Michael Oldfather about, I have a different religion from my mom, and I took her up to see the monk. I became a Buddhist, and there's a monk up in Topeka, and she didn't know what to make of the monk. Because she first when she thought of me going up to the temple and going to Kansas City and doing these things, she's like, oh, white slavery. And I was like, my friend Ginger's told, my mom's friend Ginger said, you're overreacting. But she got to meet the monk, and he said, take care of mom. And that's one thing that kind of won her over with the monk, because it's like, he always says, take care of mom. And he always say, hi, mom, how you doing? You know, he says, hi, mom. And he's very friendly to her, and I always say, take care of mom. So my mom's okay with me being Buddhist, but she's kind of iffy about it, but she's still okay about it because she likes the monk. So.
Ann Cowan, my family, which tends to be very conservative, well-adjusted, middle-class, white, puts up with me, and I have very different religious and political views, and at times lifestyle, running off when my first grandchild's on the way to join a revolution in Nicaragua. And I have found the secret to being totally accepted by your family is to go so far that you are just the crazy Aunt Anne, and they will accept absolutely anything.
That's wonderful advice. Well, thank you very much for sharing your stories. It was wonderful to see all the different definitions that we had, and that some people did answer Michael's question, so we appreciate that. What I'd like to do is we are now going to did you have any questions that you wanted to ask of Amy or Laura, our speakers today? Okay. All right. Well, they'll be available after to chat with you too. Would you please stand as you are able and sing with us our closing hymn, number 314, We Are Children of the Earth. This is from Sir Thomas More, English humanist, statesman, and Chancellor of England. Family life is full of major and minor crises, the ups and downs of health, success and failure in career, marriage and divorce, and all kinds of characters. It is tied to place and events and histories. With all of these felt details, life etches itself into memory and personality. It's difficult to imagine anything more nourishing to the soul. Have a wonderful week, and thank you.